We're going to call this property local sales tax division to order. And we are going to start off with Ms. Gill and Mr. Kroll. We have some discussion on that question that was asked yesterday on the shifts and how all that works onto the spreadsheet. So whoever wants to go first, if you would begin on that.
Members, Kathy Still, House Fiscal. You have three new revisions of the spreadsheet, and I will draw your attention to the base spreadsheet that I talked about yesterday, and on page 4, I've added a couple of tracking line items to the sheet, and this is some tracking that will happen as we move into the House Tax Committee spreadsheet, but this tracking includes line 89, the K-12 shift that will happen because of the global agreement to shift aides from a 90-10 format to a 73-27 format. And so you see on line 89, the K-12 shift. In addition, line 90 reflects some monies that will be coming to us through federal funds through the American Recovery and Investment Act. And that was not part of the purview of this division for spending, but we are tracking them, and so I have added them to the bottom of the spreadsheet. As you can see, these two items do not have any impact on our targets, which is cost savings of $250 million on line 84 in FY 10 and 11, and $362 million in FY 12 and 13. With respect to the question on how market value credits and our reductions, proposed reductions to the market value credit and the impact on school aides, Mr. Crow is here to provide a little bit more clarification on that particular issue.
Very good. Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Greg Crow. I'm the fiscal analyst for education, for K-12 education finance. I'll give you a very, very short description of the shifts and how they play through the property tax budget. Basically, a majority of school funding on the aid side is paid on a 90-10 basis. We pay 90% of it in the current year, 10% in the subsequent year in order to make up for changes in pupil counts and changes in characteristics of property value and types of pupils. The appropriations for property tax credits against school levies are also made on that same split basis, and those appropriations are adjusted in the education statutes. And so when the education committee or leadership tells the education committee to change that split from 90-10 to some other number, that impacts the market value credit appropriation that you all are responsible for and responsible for tracking. As you know, that change is being made to 73% current year, 27% future year or subsequent year, and that's the change you see reflected on line 89. Basically, there's less less money being paid in the current year, so it saves the state money on a one-time basis. The changes that you're making in market value credit, the reason that those show shift changes is because basically by reducing the credit by $20 million, you're reducing the amount of money that can be shifted and the amount of money then that can be saved to the bottom line. So the changes on lines 23 and 27 actually reflect marginal changes from the big reduction on line 89. So in other words, there's less money to shift, so there's less shift savings from the state because you've reduced the market value credit. The other big K-12 shift that comes into play only when this credit has changed is the property tax recognition shift. The K-12 committee will be requiring school districts to recognize 48.6% of their property taxes payable for a given year in the fiscal year prior to when it would be received as revenue. Because of that, when you, as a committee, reduce property tax, the market value credit, and the disparity reduction aid, what you're doing is actually raising the amount of levy that schools will do. And so by raising that levy, you're raising the amount of shiftable revenue that the district will move from the fiscal year that it would normally be applied to into the current fiscal year. So in other words, in May, for the May 2009 payment, that's normally revenue for the school year that starts this fall. Because of that property tax shift, districts will be required to recognize most of that May payment as revenue for the current school year. That saves the state money because we offset that with a reduction in state aid. So by reducing the credit, you raise school levies because there's less credit, and we use the net of credits and levies to calculate the shiftable amount. So by raising that levy, you actually shift some more property tax revenue into the current year, reducing the state's obligation to pay state aid, moving that from this year to the next year. That's why you see on lines 24 and 28 those changes starting in fiscal 10, pay 09 instead of fiscal 11, which is when the market value credit reduction actually occurs. And since all of those changes are in a sense out of your control, because those adjustments are being made in the K-12 finance bill, and so the effort here is just to reflect, one, what the impact of those shifts is on line 89, and then the marginal changes that occur because of your decisions on the two credits.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Crowe. Thank you, Ms. Schill. At this time, Ms. Dalton, would you go over the county option revenue reform spreadsheet? Whoever who wanted to do that, I know that was second on the list of things to be done first thing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, actually I'm going to tag team this with Mr. Hines, because he actually did the printout.
Very good. So what are we looking at?
You are looking at a three-page handout. It has six counties on it, starting with the county of Clay. And all of them start the same. It has the population, the levy aid base, which is what's used in the governor's cut, and in the House File 2020 cut if you don't impose the sales tax, and then actually the certified CPA. Up at the top, it talks about how we make the calculation of new sales tax revenues. We start with the gross sales tax revenue estimate for the county. This is what we think a half-cent sales tax would raise in each county. The next line, local sales tax obligations assumed. If you have a city sales tax, or you have, in the case of Hennepin County, the Twins tax, this is the amount of obligation that you have to pay before, you know, you can do anything else. And so then the third line is the net sales tax revenue, and that's what we use in calculating what your county program aid cut is, and that's what's used in determining how much new revenue you have. Your county program aid cut, if you impose a sales tax, is based on how much net sales tax revenue you have on a per capita basis. Clay County has $32 per capita. Its CPA cut is 50% of the revenue over $7 per capita and 75% of the sales tax revenue over $17 per capita. So their county program aid cut, if they imposed the sales tax, would be $927,000. And Steve is going to take you through the lower box, which actually compares.
Very good. Mr. Hines.
So, Mr. Chairman, it's hopefully fairly self-explanatory, but the the first two columns show the impact of the governor's proposal column. The first column, if the county did not choose to participate in the human service delivery consolidation, the second column if they did choose to participate, and then the second two columns refer to the situation under House Bill 2020, again where the county has an option. The first column would be to not impose the sales tax, and the second column would be to, if they did impose the sales tax. So you can see the CPA cut, the county program aid cut, is in the, for the first three columns, is a percentage of the levy plus aid base, and the cut in the House File 2020 is in between the governor's, the two proposals by the governor. And then for the fourth column, the option under House File 2020, where the county did not impose the sales tax, does impose a sales tax, excuse me. The CPA cut there is not a percentage of the levy plus aid, but it comes from up the part Pat just described up above, the CPA cut determined based on the sales tax revenue. And you can see in this case that the CPA cut is, it works out to be in Clay County's case about half of the sales tax revenues, $900,000 out of the $1.8 million. The next line is showing the additional levy. This is basically making the point that in the first three cases, you are allowed to levy back those aid cuts, and in the case of a county that did impose the local sales tax, you don't levy, this is on the property tax side, you don't levy back the aid cut.
So, Mr. Hines, this is the point where we talk about the property tax savings as compared to if you recouped all your losses through a property tax levy. So this is where you would see the savings.
Exactly, Mr. Chair. We're unsure exactly what sort of numbers to describe in this. Hopefully it might be a little different what you want to look at, but the next line just shows the sales tax revenue, and then the bottom line shows the net change in revenues. So under the first three columns, you're basically allowed to levy back the cut, and you come out to be the same as you were before any cuts. And under these, if you impose a sales tax in the case of Clay County, they actually are ahead in revenues by about $880,000. And I guess they also have a levy that's less because their levy, additional levy, is zero. So it kind of depends on how you want to characterize the situation, if you want to look at the property tax situation or the overall revenue effect. But they basically levy a sales tax of $1.8 million and end up with additional revenues of $890,000 in the case of Clay County.
In that, Mr. Hines, net revenue change is over their 2009 base county program aid. It's not over like the governor's cuts or our cuts. It's over their certified before the cuts. That's new revenue from what they entered the year coming into.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, okay. Exactly.
Any questions on that? They've got other examples, and I don't know. Maybe this would be, you want to go to one more?
This would be the situation for 2010 now.
Yeah.
So a lot of the factors a lot of times are 2009, but this is where their situation for pay 2010.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My apologies, I came in late, so I just want to clarify this. The additional levy that's listed under our first three scenarios in the spreadsheet, and this is for staff, how does that relate to the levy limits that are in place? How are those occurring with levy limits?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, this is the amount that they may levy under the levy limits. If they are trying to hold themselves harmless, this is the amount that they would have to levy to make up for the county program aid cuts. And the current law does allow them to make up for any cuts in 2010.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Garofalo.
And so, staff, and so is that an exclusion of the current levy limits, or would this be under the levy limit cap?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, this would be under the levy limit cap. Levies are calculated based on levy plus aid. We grow that amount, and then we subtract off your new aid. So if you have less aid than you had in the previous year, you have more levy authority.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Any other questions on that? How about the Representative Lanning?
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to Mr. Hines and Ms. Dalton for putting this information together. This is exactly what I was asking for yesterday, and I think it helps to clarify just how this really works. What is particularly striking to me is that, and it varies from county to county in these examples, but in the case of my own county, they levy the tax, and they only get half of the revenue. The other half goes to the state. And what is of concern to me is, I don't think every county is going to do this, choose to do this, if we're giving them the opportunity. And what you're going to have is you're going to have counties that do impose a half cent, and the voters don't try to repeal it. They're in effect going to be helping the state's budget out disproportionately to what counties, other counties who haven't imposed it. And Ms. Dalton, is that?
Well, I think it, Representative Lanning, might be how you would characterize that, because if you're taking cuts, let's say you accept $116 million in cuts, you're helping out the budget deficit that way, but you're having to make up any of the cuts with property. So now you got the property taxpayers basically paying for balancing the budget. So I mean, you've got half the, you're correct, half the dollars go back in kind of an offset on the county program aid, and that is so we can get like $100 million of savings, which helps balance the budget. But if you just cut with no other revenue option, you're basically doing the same thing. You're solving the budget for the state, but you're making up with property taxes in that regard. So I agree with what you're saying, but I think it's how you could look at it the other way too.
Mr. Chairman, I think the tradition on local option sales taxes, which as I said before, I've never liked local option sales taxes, and I know, Mr. Chairman, you haven't either. But the tradition has been that if the state does allow local unit of government to impose a tax, that they get to keep the tax for the purposes for which the tax was authorized. But that will not be the case here. They'll get to retain a portion of it to provide some additional revenue, but they're not. Ms. Dalton,
I know what. Go ahead, Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think one of the things that's a little confusing is that there is some equalization going on for differences in sales tax base, and that equalization is occurring in how we calculate the county program aid cut if you impose a local sales tax. For instance, in Clay County, the county program aid cut is roughly equal, regardless of whether you impose a sales tax or you don't impose a sales tax. If you go to Olmsted County, which is the fourth example that we do, Olmsted County actually has a fairly large gross sales tax revenue, but virtually all of it is has to go to the city of Rochester, where about 95% of the sales already occur and are currently taxed. So the amount of sales tax, new sales tax revenue that Olmsted County is going to get is only $7.35 per capita. So if you take a look at what its county program aid cut is, without a sales tax, it's almost $3 million. If it imposes the sales tax, because they get very little money from the sales tax revenue after they pay for Rochester's current obligations, their county program aid cut is only $24,000. So there's equalization that's going on here using the mechanism of how deep those county program aid cuts are. Counties that have virtually no sales tax base and impose a sales tax will actually make it zero cut in their county program aid. Hennepin County, the third county listed here, because they have such a large sales tax base, even though they're subsuming the obligation of the twins tax, they're going to essentially lose all of their county program aid if they impose the sales tax. However, they're still going to get an extra $30 million over and above what they currently have. So there's some equalization going on here. If you look at the original run that we handed out, one of the things it says is the net new dollars per capita. It's the very last column on that sheet. And you will see that most of those tend to be right around $20 to $30 per capita of new revenue if they impose the sales tax. So to the extent that it could be equalized, and it couldn't be entirely equalized. Some places have no tax bases. So much of their tax base is already consumed in their city tax. We couldn't bring them up. But there is some equalization going on in how we calculate the county program aid cut.
Yep. Representative Lanny.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe I'm misunderstanding this, but to me it looks like a reverse equalization. Taking the case of Olmsted County, given these numbers, they would be foolish not to impose the tax. Mm-hmm. Because they would have virtually no cut in program aid, and they would have $1 million more in revenue to work with. In the case of my county, we would, even if we did impose it, we still would have a county program aid cut of $927,000, and we would only get $881,000. So we still, I mean, that's a real disparity, it seems to me, in terms of how this works.
Yeah, and Representative Lanning, I think one thing to look at is that would be assuming absolutely no cuts. And I think with the reality of things, there's going to be cuts to counties. And, you know, whether or not it's the governor's proposal or others, there's probably going to be some fairly good cuts. And if you were to look at Clay County, for example, in comparison to the governor's cuts, that local option sales tax would actually bring $1.9 million more than the governor's cut. So, I mean, that $881,000 is assuming absolutely no cuts, and I think everyone realizes that's not reality. There's going to be cuts. So, if you were to put some cuts, and we're going to use the governor's, it's actually, if they do the local option, they would bring in $1.9 million more than otherwise. So, that's fairly significant. And one other, and I might have misspoke, but all of the sales tax revenue would come back to the county. The net you're looking at is because of the county program aid offset. That, I mean, you're not sending any of the sales tax, of course, back to the state. It's all coming to the county. It's the offset that results in that net gain, the offset on the county program aid. If you're under, yeah, Representative Lanning.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Doesn't this proposal assume that it's an alternative to the governor's proposal? That it's not in addition to the governor's proposal or in conjunction with it, it's an alternative. And so comparing it to what the governor's proposal is kind of a non-comparison because doesn't the proposal assume it's an alternative?
Yeah, Representative Lanning, technically the alternative would be our proposal of a $100 million cut. That would be because that's what we would have in there. And, you know, it kind of gets back to the whole idea of what we're trying to deal with here. You know, how do you balance this budget of $6.4 billion and at the same time try to protect the property taxpayers? Because we know in the last few times that we've been in budget deficits, we've just heaped more and more property taxes on the backs of our seniors and our young families and our farmers and small businesses. Now, how can we prevent all these job cuts that are going to occur? How can we maintain essential services? And one thing this allows us to do is to score $100 million in savings in county program aid. And that allowed us to do several things. It allowed us to protect the property tax refund program and be able to keep some progressivity there. And also greatly reduce the amount we had to cut in local government aid. And, you know, I mean, I think everyone would agree there's no perfect plan here, but how do you kind of try to do all of those things and yet still try to do it in a framework that is realistic and plausible? I mean, it's not like this is something new in concept. You know, both parties have done it. The governor's approved of this in concept. And so we wanted to put something out there that could not be dismissed out of hand. And granted, there's maybe other options and proposals and so forth, but that's what we were trying to do is those things, and this was the best option we came up with. But and we can certainly talk about this more if we want to, but Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I really would suggest that you look at column 12 of the original printout.
This is the long one right here.
The long one. The very last column talks about the net gain in revenue to the county if they impose the local sales tax compared to current law. And if you look at Clay County will end up having $14 per capita more than it has under current law. Olmsted County will have $7 more per capita than it has under current law. I'm sorry, is it 16? I'm sorry, 16. I'm reading one number off. Most of these, and I'm sorry, I had said most were between 20 and 30. Most of them are between $10 and $20. The average is 20. So the proposal was written to try to equalize how much new money counties would have if they imposed the local sales tax.
This is going to be a tough day. I haven't even moved 2020 yet here, so we're gonna do that while we have a quorum here. Get things on the table, but let's just complete. No, this is good. These are good questions. Well, we have this seat out here. That's good. We can come back to that, but I'm going to make a couple motions just so we can get things moving here. So I move that House File 2020 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Then I'm going to move that the Property and Local Sales Tax Division Report labeled 8-2020 DE2 be adopted, and that's the DE2 amendment you have in front of you, and we will vote on that to get this before us. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And then, before we go any further, are there any other questions just kind of on, and we can debate the merits later on, but just on the sheets here, if there's any more questions on what the numbers are saying. Representative Mullery.
I just wondered if you could have a page run the blank sheet that we have on here. Most of us had a blank sheet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, it looks like they just missed copying the middle page of the printout, and so they're missing the page with Olmsted County.
Very good. We will make sure everyone gets updated. Sorry about that. Anything else? Okay, then we are going to move. I'm going to move the author's amendment labeled House 2020-88, that it be adopted, and that's being passed out right now. In the last few days, we've listened to testifiers, we've talked with folks, and we've made some changes based on those discussions and the testimony yesterday, and we thought there were some very good ideas brought up. And so with that, I'm going to ask Ms. Dalton to go over the changes on this, but let's just hold off for a second while everyone gets the author's amendment. All right, Ms. Dalton, would you proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lines 1.3 and 1.4 are just technical corrections. We needed a "and thereafter" on the levy limits language, even though levy limits expire after pay 2010. Lines 1.5 through 1.8 address the issue of motor vehicle sales tax as it relates to the county local sales taxes. We are removing the county local sales tax from motor vehicle sales, and we are replacing it with an excise tax of $20 per motor vehicle sold by a dealer in the county. And this mirrors the language that exists for a lot of local city sales taxes.
And we heard testimony yesterday that sales tax on the motor vehicle sales tax is going to have some competitive disadvantages and so forth. So point well taken there. All right, Ms. Dalton?
Lines 1.9 and 1.10 are just minor grammatical changes, and Ms. Baker will discuss the next section.
Ms. Baker.
Starting with line 11 through line 17 are some modifications that was made to the disaster damaged homes, the partial valuation exclusion. What it does is it changes that the gross living area after reconstruction, instead of being 130%, can go up to 150%. It also makes a change in the amount of damage that occurred, and it decreases that from $50,000 down to $25,000. Or the increased value, I'm sorry. And then it adds down in the section that talks about this value coming back on the tax rolls for the restoration or reconstruction, it adds that in the very first year, none of that value would come back. So the full amount would be excluded. And then it picks up the changes so that in the second, third, fourth year, it would be as in the bill with the three quarters the half and the quarter. So it really just adds that first year that they get 100% exclusion for the restoration or reconstruction.
That was an expansion of Representative Broad's bill, and what that would do is that a homeowner who has a home that would be damaged or destroyed in a disaster, you know, such as floods, for example, in the Red River Valley, would get a little additional property tax relief and just have one less thing they'd have to worry about here. Because what it would do, it makes it a little easier to qualify, and also would allow any difference in the value of what the property was versus after it's been reconstructed. You basically have a limited market value. In the first year, all of the new dollars would be excluded, and then it would go 75, 50, 25, and zero. So it would provide just one less thing among all the tons of things they'd have to worry about, put that off the table. So, Ms. Baker.
Okay, moving on line 1.18, that change, which is on page 49 of the bill, that is a provision that was Representative Loeffler's. It has to do with relative homesteads, where it prohibited the residential relative homesteads after a certain date. The Department of Revenue asked if we would change that to applications that are approved before December 16th, because that is a date that they use, or that is in statutes, for making changes in homesteads. And whereas the July 1 date really is just a date picked out of the air, and so the department asked if we would change that to December 16th. The next lines 1.20 to 1.25, that is a bill of Representative Winkler's, I believe, and that is on changing the housing improvement districts. His bill actually had the sunset totally removed. What this does, it extends the sunset for three additional years. So now new housing improvement districts can be established up until the June 30th, 2012, without having special law. And then we'll go back to Ms. Dalton's changes starting on 1.26.
Ms. Dalton.
1.26 is just a technical change to the provision for mayor. We had moved everything to 100,000, but we forgot to move the change in the cap on their LGA to 100,000 increase as well.
Okay.
Page 75, line 2, we are changing the percent of ANTC used in the pay 2010 city aid and credit cut from 1.935 to 1.8889. This is because I was given new updated market value credit numbers, and there was more market value credit than we originally thought, and so we didn't need to have quite as high a rate to do a cut of $68.225 million.
So, Ms. Dalton, what does that mean? And I mean, these folks out here want to know numbers, not...
basically, for pay 2009 and for pay 2010, we are not changing the amount, the total amount we are cutting from city aids and credits, but the distribution of it, of the cut, is slightly different. It's a little bit heavier from market value credits now and a little bit lighter from LGA,
okay,
because we have increased market value credit estimates.
Okay, thank you.
Page 2, lines 1 and 2 just clarify what ANTC we're using in calculating the aid and credit cuts in pay 2010. We want to make sure that we're using data that we actually have as opposed to preliminary data that could change later. 2.3 is the other change in the city aid cut related to the market value credit. 2.4 is just a correction to a cross-reference. 2.5 corrects some language in the miscellaneous that was ignoring the fact that we were limiting the levy limits to just pay 2010 in Article 1, so it's just making the two articles consistent. 2.6, the bill had said that if inflation went negative, that levy limits growth couldn't go negative as well. This is now going to limit the inflation factor used in calculating levy limits to between 2% and 3.9%. So if the implicit price deflator falls below 2%, they still get a 2% growth in the levy limit base. And then page 2.7 to essentially the end is Representative Liebling's bill for the Rochester Lodging and Food and Beverage Tax to fund the Mayo Civic Center if the state also provides some money for that construction cost.
Thank you very much. Any discussion on the A8 office amendment? Ms. Hill?
Mr. Chair and members, I have just been going through the amendment myself, and we have no fiscal impact other than what is already contained in the spreadsheet, just for your information.
Thank you very much for that. All right, if not, we're going to vote on the author's amendment, the House H-2020-88. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Okay, we are open now. We've got everything before us. We are now open for amendments, discussion, criticisms, glowing salutations, whatever. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, not Madam Chair. Mr. Chairman, on page 48, section 7, this was the effective date was amended. On page 1 of the A8 amendment, this is on Article 5, Section 7. This is the quote-unquote Loeffler bill, my friend, Representative Loeffler. I want to make sure that I understand this, that in the testimony we heard in this bill, it was with regard to a specific problem in the Minneapolis area, and I'm wondering, in the application of this law, is this limited to just a certain geography of cities of the first class, or is this going to be applying with the non-agricultural exception? Is this going to be applying statewide or across the state?
Ms. Baker, would
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, this is statewide.
Okay, so
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members, I mean, I guess I'm not going to offer an amendment unless I get a signal from the majority that perhaps they're open to this, but it would seem that we are killing a fly with a shotgun here, that a bill that was offered to us for a specific proposal is changing a statewide policy. And I'm just wondering, not to lengthen the committee deliberations, Mr. Chairman, but if any members of the majority party have any thoughts on this, perhaps even my friend Representative Loeffler.
Representative Loeffler, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Garofalo. You may recall that the assessors actually testified in support of this because it actually makes their job much easier and fairer, because they don't know when the relative has moved out or not, or and they can't really verify relative status. The value right now of this is $312 a year, so it's not a large fiscal incentive for most people either direction, but it is being used as a carrot in marketing these for particular uses.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and my friend and colleague, Representative Loeffler, I just want to make it understand that in the 2009 session, a carrot is raising the homestead property tax, raising the property taxes on these to make them more expensive. That's the carrot we're offering to them.
Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, no, I said that some in marketing these properties are using it as a carrot. It's not necessarily to the other taxpayers in that district who actually might be subsidizing that.
Okay, well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not getting any signals.
Representative Garofalo.
From the majority that they are open to removing this provision or modifying it, so I will not be offering an amendment today, but reserve the right to at some point in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone? I see there is an amendment before the division here. Oh, yeah. We have a new author of this amendment this year, Representative Detmer. It has had fairly good success in the past, I will say, on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And basically what we're doing here, the current limited market value is sunsetting in 2009. And what this bill will do, it's just going to extend it out to 2011. for the assessment years.
Thank you. So Representative Detmer moves the A7 amendment. Members, this is dealing with limited market value. This is the last year of limited market value. Next year, we're back on base, and I think you heard most of the we might have testifiers on this one, but members, I would ask that you vote no. There are concerns on the seasonal rec area and primarily the agricultural area. Those are the two big ones. But remember, just like other things we've talked about in this committee, there are shifts onto other property taxpayers, and maybe some of the testifiers will do that. But we're near the end. This is the last year. Next year in 2010, we have a clean slate. So members, I ask you to vote no, but we've got a testifier, at least one.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Tom Heskey. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We would oppose the amendment. We were hoping, as you indicated, that limited market value would sort of fade into the sunset. It does shift burden onto commercial industrial property. One of the effects of it is a shift of burden onto CI property. It also has varying effects where it shifts burden from protected homes onto unprotected homes. So we just think it's really a policy that is bad for the state and should be let to sunset. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Lucheski.
I'm going to say what Mr. Heskey said, and I agree with his testimony.
Thank you. Representative Mowry.
Mr. Chairman, if I vote with the chairman, does that mean I'm voting with the chamber? And I'm pretty worried about what that's going to do in the next campaign.
Representative Mowry, that would move you up to like 3% for the year if you were with the chamber, if you were to vote with them. Yes, Representative Mowry.
I'm chairing a bill this year for the NFIB, so I'm really worried.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as a former author of this, with all due respect to my friends from the business community, the whole purpose of this limited market value is to soften some of the excessive increases that there have been in valuations going up. And obviously, for residential property, those valuation increases have been dropping, and in fact going in the opposite direction, and there are far fewer residential properties that would benefit now from even an extension of limited market value because of what's been happening in the market. But there are parts of the state, there are classifications of property where they're still seeing excessive increases in values. And when you see values going up 15, 20, 25% a year, as has happened in many parts of the state, that's a shift. Those properties are paying more of the share of the tax load because of those rapid increases. And limited market value is just trying to temper that a little bit, trying to soften that a little bit. As anybody in this committee knows, and anybody who's been around property taxes over the years, biggest complaint that we hear from our citizens, from our residents, are the valuation increases. And so I, with all due respects to my friends in the business community, I think that this is reasonable to continue. And this amendment does not do it permanently. And in an ideal world, in normal circumstances, I can accept the argument for eliminating limited market value. But when we still see the kinds of increases we've had, then I feel differently.
Any other discussion on the A7 amendment? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on the A7 amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Other amendments or comments? We'll go to Chair Lucheski. Are there any other amendments? If not, Representative Winchester.
I do just want to comment. I want to comment to thank you, Mr. Chair, and the members of the Property Tax Committee bipartisanly, who I know everyone had a lot of input bipartisanly, and not everyone can support your bill, but I do want to sort of single out, if I may, Mr. Chair, you and Representative Dietrich and Representative Lanning, who had these vision pieces in here, and I just think it's really impressive. And the amount of people in the property tax system who were brought in to work through these complicated issues, the real inclusive tone that the three chairs of these areas set, I think was really remarkable and really unprecedented. So I really do appreciate that. I do want to note that it is not fun to vote for this bill or bills that are still yet to come. Cities and counties are in a really rough shape here now. And so I don't think any member of the legislature relishes cutting folks. It's just not fun. Part of getting out of this deficit is a combination in the full tax area, and we'll see that as next steps of revenue and cuts. And I just want to recognize that, you know, our cities and our counties, our partners in this state fiscal relationship, take a lot of drubbing from the public, and it's really, to me, it's unfounded. These people are being asked to do significant heavy lifting for the state of Minnesota, criticized, given levy limits, given mandates they don't want, and maintenance of effort, of course, is a whole other chapter. But I just want to thank you that this bill is attempting to sort of, in my mind, thread the needle, you know, just find that, you know, what do we do in this tough time to give these units of government some more flexibility while they're being cut. And I think, Mr. Chair, you did that with this local option for counties. It's an option, it's voluntary, and counties will make their individual decisions whether they want to do that or not, and that will be completely up to them. I think there's been an effort here to take away a lot of the mandates on cities, remove levy limits, which would provide a lot of flexibility, and bring in new options for cities, whether it's emergency debt or, you know, other things that are going on in this bill. But we can't all forget that still the cities and counties, you know, they don't like this. I mean, they're not wanting this to happen to them. This is not a good year. And we just need to recognize that those people have all been at the table. Instead of slamming doors, they've been at the table trying to do kind of the least damage to everyone. Will this be the perfect solution? You know, nobody knows that. But I think the committee work has based the whole premise on keeping this partnership going and doing things based on ability to pay. I think one of the most critical pieces of this bill is the commitment to the PTR. I think it cannot be underestimated in the Minnesota Tax Incidence Report that keeping that circuit breaker funded, even at the expense of other things like market value homestead credit, is critical to take a very regressive tax, property tax, and make it less regressive. So if it weren't for that commitment, Mr. Chair, that you've got in your bill, you know, we'd see the net, you know, the net system be more regressive. So I think your county option sales allows for the saving of PTR. It gives those locally elected officials a choice. You know, do we want to have, you know, pick between relatively the same regressivity on the index, sales or property, but have, you know, more different options in there. So I just think, you know, the other work that happened with the Council of Nonprofits and all the charitable parts of the Minnesota community to make that whole system work was very complicated. And then there's all kinds of member bills in here that are getting at certain problems, and all within the frame of a deficit. I mean, and that the total spreadsheet on this bill is a cut to state government. So I think, you know, people just need to recognize that in a tough time, this committee, and under your leadership, Mr. Chair, has done significant bold reform. We'll take a lot of arrows over it. But when everything else is, you know, vetoed and has fallen, and we're looking down the end of session, this is a plan that I think, in my estimation, survives. It works, shrinks government, and allows local units some more options, and very seriously attempts to address a lot of complicated issues with a lot of folks here who are under duress, whether it's the townships, the cities, the counties, or anyone else. So I just really, I think, you know, I would be remiss to not kind of go off on this little soapbox I'm going on and thank the hard work of everybody on this committee, bipartisanly, even if people are going to vote against it today. I get that. Everybody's put some effort into this, and the larger Minnesota community has had huge input, and I think this is a very rock-solid proposal, and I just want to thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Anyone else before Representative Lanning goes out, because he's the lead on the Republican side? Anyone else?
Mm.
Representative Lanning.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as we started out on this journey, we all recognized that our challenge was rather daunting, and And there's no perfect solution to what we're facing, obviously, and a lot of tough choices are going to have to be made. And I appreciate the way in which you've gone about putting this report together, Mr. Chairman, and I thank you for that. And I appreciate the opportunity that I've had to help frame some major sections of this bill. And I for one, am supportive of moving this bill onto the Tax Committee, where I know we're going to have further discussion. I support much of the bill, but I still have heartburn about the county local option. I've never liked the local option sales taxes, and the more I've found out about it here today, my comfort level has not been eased. It has been been made worse. And so I look forward to those discussions in the full Tax Committee. And again, Mr. Chairman, thank you for your leadership here today, and we'll carry forward the discussion.
Representative Lanning, thank you so much, and appreciate those comments, and I have very much appreciated working with you throughout this session on this division report, and you've had a lot of your fingerprints around this report and a lot of the really important stuff. In fact, yesterday with all the testifiers, all they could talk about is how much they loved Representative Lanning's provisions, and no one said anything good about mine. But at any rate, it speaks very well for you, Representative Lanning, and appreciate all of your efforts on this. And I know this is not an easy vote for all. As Representative Linchevsky said, we're cutting government. $250 million this biennium and $362 million in the next. But big thanks go out to all the members of this committee. And I think we had some pretty open debate throughout. I also just everyone participated. So while even in these in the work groups, folks participated. And again, I want to thank Representative Dietrich and Lanning for their work on chairing that. I do think, while not everyone agrees with everything in here, it was a product of the things that we talked about and the principles that we talked about. And I also really want to thank staff who, as we know, all of this information that we have and all these summaries and all these runs and putting all this together simply would not occur without the great work of all of our staff out there, and partisan and nonpartisan staff. And so I really, really appreciate that. And as I want to echo also what Representative Linchevsky said, as far as all the local government groups and everyone else, you could have said, you know what, we're going to put our foot down, and I don't care if we've got a deficit here, you know, there should be no cuts, and we're just not. But you came to the table, you understood the situation, and I think we've got a very strong product because of your input. And if it's not local assessors, I could go all the way down the route. But everyone out there representing special interests really appreciate all the work. Just a couple comments on things is that, you know, we really have a couple options here. You know, we have a $6.4 billion deficit. And we could go down the path that we've traveled down before. And typically what we would do is we'd cut LGA, we'd cut county program aid, and we wouldn't provide any flexibility, and there'd be lost jobs, and property taxes would go up. I think that's kind of the traditional way in which we've done that. We'd cut some market value homestead credits, and you just pick a little bit and shrink things up and go about your way. But I think what we're doing here offers another option, another alternative. And in that, it's a new way of thinking, a bold approach to doing things, and looking at not just going down that same road that we've always gone down before. And I think the cornerstone, which of course is probably the most controversial part of this, is the county option revenue reform. That certainly is the most controversial part. But it is the hub, if you will, that gets us to doing some of the things that we're able to do despite having this huge budget deficit. What we're able to do for counties, first of all, is to say to them, we're going to get cuts. We are going to give you another option. Rather than just raising property taxes, we're going to give you another option. Raise a half-cent sales tax. And it doesn't just help
the counties, but it helps the state and everyone else with this proposal. With $100 million savings, we're able to, first of all, protect taxpayers, jobs, and essential services. We're able to protect the property tax refund program. In fact, we're actually at about $20 million new to that, not only in dealing with the threshold, but also there's about a 10% increase on the maximum. So we're able to do that. And I don't know if we would have been able to do that with any other option. It allows us to probably save about 1,500 jobs. And if you were to put this overall bill in context, I think you could say about three things about it. First of all, it puts property taxpayers first. In that, if you look at this, there's probably little or no property tax increases. And with a $6.4 billion deficit, there are probably little or no property tax increases. And I think for our seniors on fixed incomes and our young families and our farmers and small businesses, they're going to breathe a sigh of relief. Finally, they're not keeping and piling more on property taxpayers. We expand, as I said, the property tax refund program to property taxpayers. Something else we do is, for the first time, I think, in the state, we're going to look at ways on how we can provide greater value for every dollar that property taxpayer pays. Through benchmarks and performance measurement systems, we've never looked at that before. So besides keeping property taxes in check, we've actually looked at ways to increase value. A second part is we're making the state more accountable. For the first time ever, we're making the state more accountable for its property tax system through the property tax principles and benchmarks. I think that's very significant when we come to accountability. First time ever, I think we've taken a very serious look at how we can reduce mandates and provide more flexibility for cities. We've talked about it and we've talked about it. I think we've done that in this bill this year. So, you know, we can... You know, there's a number of other things in the bill, the nonprofits, the public charity. I think that's going to relieve some stress there. We put nursing homes under the nonprofits. Seasonal rec tax deferral program. We've moved up the TNT dates on some of those things. We've expanded the senior deferral program. No cuts to townships. We've made no cuts to townships. And for the most part, I think we've protected local government aid, especially into the out years. And so I don't think a lot would have thought we could have done a few of those things. A couple of comments to those who have some reservations about things still. Times are changing. And I don't think anyone would disagree that we are probably in what some have called a permanent fiscal crisis, which means we are going to be battling, just as we are this year, probably for many bienniums to come. Because, as we all know, we're not probably going to balance the budget with all revenue and all expenditures. There's going to be some one-time dollars, there's going to be some shifting. We're going to come back next time, and the next time, and the next time. And so, I don't see this getting better anytime soon. You look at the Budget Trends Commission report. What do they tell us? In the next 25 years, revenue is going to go up 3.9%. Health and Human Services, 8.5%. What's that leave for every other education, property tax, aids, and credits? 0.2% increase. Now, I know who's going to get the money out of that 0.2%. And it's not going to be property tax, aids, and credits. Which means, if you look for the long term, the way we're looking, we're going to have more cuts to property tax, aids, and credits. And that's why I think it's important that folks in every county across the state, in every corner, from Rock County to Houston County to Lake County to Kitson County, and every county in between, needs to take a serious look at revenue options. And if you, if some local units of government think their salvation is going to be in the economy turning around or some respite from another body of this legislature, that will only be short-term because we have too many long-term things working against us. So I know various groups, They worry about change. They, you know, we talk a lot about that. We don't like the status quo, but we don't want to make any changes. And that's what this bill is about. Maybe it's a leap of faith to some extent. But we cannot continue to go down the same path that we're heading right now because it is unsustainable. And when you look at the hierarchy of things, it's going to be education, health care, and even if we're third, you look at that chart of the budget trends committee, we're not going to be able to sustain this. And the options for strengthening the state and local fiscal relationship, it's becoming more limited. Good options are becoming more limited. And so we need to look at various options. So for those who have the reservations, just think about into the future what we might be looking at. And you know, a lot of the options aren't all that good. And finally, I think this bill sends a very strong message that we are putting property taxpayers first and that we are looking to provide greater efficiencies, accountability, and value to property taxpayers in the long run. And so, again, members and staff and everyone who's contributed in any way this year, thank you so much for all of your contributions to this report. And with that, I'm going to remove, if I can find my proper motion here, I'm going to remove House File 2020. There we go. I renew my motion of House File 2020 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. And do we take a roll call vote on this?
No.
Okay, very good. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
No.
Motion carried. Members, anything else? We have some minutes. Representative Garofalo moves the March 31st, 2009 minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion carried. Members, it's an honor to serve with you. Thank you so much. And we are adjourned.